it's a coaching staff, not coaching individuals. We are a team too. So you better get used to that or you're going to struggle.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, we're joined by Riley Conroy, assistant coach at the University of South Alabama. Riley's path in basketball started as a player at Tulane before moving into coaching with stops at Sunrise Christian Academy, Southeastern Louisiana, and now South Alabama. Along the way, he's built a reputation as a strong recruiter and someone who understands how to add value within a staff. In this episode, we discuss the biggest mistake young coaches make when trying to stand out on their staff, what he would prioritize if he were to step into a head coaching role tomorrow, and advice on how younger coaches can learn to evaluate and recruit players to best fit their head coach's needs.
Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get free shipping on your purchase of a brand new Dr. Dish.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back with another episode, your favorite Rising Coaches podcast. Your hosts here today, as always, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. On the podcast, we're excited. We get an opportunity to speak with the assistant coach, the University South Alabama, ladies and gentlemen, Riley Conroy. Coach Conroy, welcome.
Thank you guys for having me. Yeah, it's been looking forward to this for a couple of weeks now since we connected, and I'm just really excited to get this thing going.
No, we appreciate it, man. People might think this is a golf podcast when they hear your name. So
you
got to make sure we like it. It's like this dude calling from Ireland. Where's he coming from? We appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks again. Seriously, it's been awesome.
One thing to note, to, I guess, pull it more into basketball, pull it away from golf, right? Mm-hmm. There's a rich background of Conroy's as well. Obviously, I know your father, which we'll get into that a whole at one point. But then, of course, now, I mean, yourself, too, being in the profession, having a great career so far. But diving into that, we usually like to bring it to the beginning. And one of the things in the beginning is your playing career. You had the opportunity to play for your father, which is first off, and absolutely, I'm sure, I want to speak for you, but I'm sure that was a cool, fun experience to be able to have a unique background. And not everybody can say they did that. It was over at Tulane. And then just talk about those experiences, not only playing for your dad, but also just learning from him, because he's one of the first people, well, I should say, he is your father who was able to coach you, and you were able to see it. You were able to see it at a young age, but then progressing into where you are now. Talk about those experiences, just playing for him, and then what you learned too.
Yeah, it was really unique. I'd always grown up wanting to play for him, but when you're growing up with your dad being a coach, you don't know what school that's going to end up being. Luckily, I'd gone to high school all 4 years in New Orleans, where Tulane is at, and so I had some stability already built in. And then got to Tulane, and we were pretty talented, and so I was at the end of the bench there, so I was just trying to just put on weight, put on muscle, find a way to not get isolated and just don't stand out too much. And so my freshman year was really tough in that way. And then sophomore year was really fun. That's when me and my dad started like really getting a player coach bond, because we'd always had the father son bond, but the player coach bond was something that we started building. And I learned a ton from him through all that, and his assistant coaches and his whole staff were awesome people, and still keep in touch with a lot of those guys. And then he actually ended up getting let go after my sophomore season. And so it was a unique experience. The transfer portal hadn't really started yet, but people were transferring, starting to do that more and more. And I don't know who this next coach is going to be, but I'm going to try to stick around for it. Like, I love New Orleans so much and love Tulane. And then Mike Dunleavy Sr. ended up getting the job. So it was a really cool experience for me, because I got dad's coaching side, which is very college-esque. And he had been a college coach his whole career. And then you bring in Mike Dunleavy, and he walks in and he's, yeah, Coach Magic Johnson, drafted Blake Griffin. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this is really cool. But it was a completely different style. So I got to see it at a young age, the college style and the NBA style. And it ended up being an incredible 4 years for me, just to see 2 years of college, 2 years of pro.
Wow, that's a great balance, man. It's funny. A lot of times parents want to be both until they have to.
That's a great point.
A lot of parents want to be coach. And I heard a guy, NFL guy, that talked about his wife coaching their daughters. And his wife said, yeah, we're going to coach the girls, aren't we? And he goes, either you're going to coach them or I'm going to coach them. He said, we are not going to coach them. He said, because they need a parent. He said, one of us has got to be the parent. We can't both coach them. But just talk about that balance there of father, son, then player coach. And that's something that sounds like it had to evolve.
Yeah.
And just talk about that evolution of how that went down.
Yeah. And it starts before I get to Tulane. One of the things I think my father did a really good job of, especially when I was coming up in not only basketball, but just playing different youth sports, was anytime I would get in the car and even start to complain a little bit about maybe a coach or a teammate, he would just immediately shut it down and just be like, nope, you gotta do what he says. You gotta do what he says. You gotta do what he says. And he would never, ever step in and say, maybe he doesn't know as much as I do yet or something like that. He would never, ever do that. And so he had me figure it out on my own. And he did a really good job of being the father until I actually started playing for him. And then he became the coach. And that's where, like you said, that's when I ended up leaning more on my mother when I needed to talk to a parent about stuff. I would text her after a rough practice. I would text her like, hey, look, because we actually lived like half a mile from where they were living because their house and our dorms were very close. Mm-hmm. If I ever needed to like run home and steal a snack or two, I text like, hey, dad, homie, had a rough practice today. I might want to avoid that, you know, going over there today.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, he did a really good job of separating the two as far as soon as practice ended, shut it down. All right, now you're my son again. And just doing that balance. So year one was a learning experience for both of us. We didn't know what we were doing as far as that relationship goes because it was the first time he had a son play for him, and it was the first time I had been coached by a parent. So it was a learning experience. But then when sophomore year came around, my second year, that's when we really started getting a rhythm to it and understanding it. And that's when we started having a lot more like funny memories, some awesome memories. That's when all that stuff started really clicking. So it was really cool. And I wish it would have gone on for 4 years. Having two is a lot more than a lot of people get.
Amen to that. No, great point.
No, I'm sure it's an awesome experience. The recruiting process probably was interesting because yeah. It was either he wasn't trying to recruit you and just let you make your own decision, or he was pushing heavy. And when you were sitting at the dinner table, if you don't come here, we got bigger problems.
Oh, yeah, and that was a funny deal, too. What happened with that is I wasn't super highly recruited or anything like that. And in my head, I was like, maybe I can go to like a non-division one and kind of work my way up and all that. But I knew that he had already known forever that I was like, I've always wanted to play for you. What do I got to do? And I got to the springtime and my mom was like, have you filled out all your school applications, all that stuff? And he was like, have you told him yet? He's going to play for me. And I was like, no one had told me that yet. So it was just real casual. He was like, yeah, you're coming over here. Come on. Yeah. So it just kind of organically happened. And he handled it really well. And he was like, yeah, you got to apply to Tulane. You better get that application and you're going to play for it next year. So it just happened real fast and real organically. So it was really cool.
Yeah, I tell you what, that's the fastest home visit ever. You were already home.
Yeah, it was just like, hey, decision's made. You're out. You're here.
I'm sure those experiences, one, those are things that you're going to probably cherish for a lifetime. I mean, my dad coached me for what? 1 year when I was a freshman in high school because he was a freshman coach. And then I ended up getting moved up to JV. Everybody's like, oh, it's because it's your dad. It's like, no. One, he didn't want to coach me because me and him, I mean, everything, we always worked great together, but it was exactly your point, the father-son relationship where, you know, as soon as you step out, it was a different experience. And I was kind of lucky that I moved up to JV, but my point is it was a cool experience and something you cherish. And I'm sure that helped you, you know, move forward. Being a coach, you learned the ins and outs. You have the easy role model to call and ask questions about. So that transition going over, I believe, what, Sunrise Christian Academy, you were the assistant right out of college. You get an opportunity, you lead the team to a top 10 national ranking. Like, what are those early years transitioning from that college to your first position? It's probably a smooth transition for you, right?
It was, except I'd grown up and there's a million different ways. And I talk to, whenever I'm talking to a younger coach, it's just got done playing or just got done being a student manager and they're trying to figure out what to do next. I tell them, like, I spent my entire life thinking that I had my whole life mapped out. I was going to play for my dad and then I was going to become a graduate assistant at whatever school he was at. And then maybe progress up into a video coordinator ops role. And then what happened was I got done playing and I was like, you know, the more I thought about it, I was like, I kind of want to go coach. I want to go see if I can actually do this. And maybe I should veer off of the path that I had just always thought I was on just to take a risk. And that's where Sunrise happened. I never thought in a million years that I would move out to Kansas, 22, 23 years old, and actually go coach a high school team. But it was the best decision I'd ever made. And I had a bunch of buddies that went the graduate assistant, graduate manager route, and they've done extremely well. And then I'm over here doing the high school thing. And I feel like I've done pretty well there too. And the biggest thing I had kind of learned with the Sunrise deal was it's about, if more than anything, it's almost more important about the people that you're working with rather than the place that you're at. The place that you're at is really important. And there's a lot of history that comes with certain universities, certain high schools, but the people you are working with, that's almost, if not more important. And I just got super, super lucky. It was not by design, just fell on a lottery ticket. The three coaches that were with me, who are all now extremely successful, but they're even better people. Luke Barnwell, he's an assistant at Iowa. Rod Clark, assistant at Indiana. And Achoki Morkobu, assistant at Texas Tech. And we all had, they were all 25, 26. I was 22, 23. I was just a dumb kid that got out of college and thought I had the world figured out. And I quickly realized that it was a lot more complicated than that, and that it took a lot of work. But the one thing that I tell people when they ask about the Sunrise deal is the one thing that I had going for me was that I was so dumb, I didn't know how hard we were working. And that was like the ignorance is bliss. Didn't know any better. We were just all working really hard. So when I got there, I saw how hard those three were working because they had been there for a year already. So I was like, okay, I guess this is just a normal day. I didn't realize that working that hard wasn't necessarily normal, but when you work that hard, success tends to follow. Yeah, and that's what happened.
No doubt, man. Nah, when you lose yourself to the job, that can sound like a negative, but actually it's painted as a positive, meaning that jump in and you don't care how deep the deep end is.
Exactly.
And you just go at it. And sometimes the one mistake younger coaches can make is they can keep score, meaning this is only my job, so I'm only going to work that hard. But yeah, if you want the ambition, you can't have the ambition when you're measuring your effort, right? Like we tell our players, let it loose. Don't put a lid on your effort. We tell our players that all the time. But we have to model that as coaches because obviously they see that, they feel that, they got great antennas. Players know when you're really rocking.
And, truly.
If you're not. And that's great advice for young coaches, which predominantly a lot of young coaches tend to listen and follow us. But I'm glad you said that, man, because it can be a little bit sobering as a young coach to realize you're not maybe working as hard as you should. But once you figure it out, and if there's a magic level to really letting it loose, but then once you do that and you get used to that, then you don't want to do it any other way. And that's the beauty of it.
Correct. And then when you're with people like the high quality people that I was with, it doesn't make it feel like work because you end up just looking forward to every day because you're just in it together. There's no isolation. You're just all in the trenches together. And that's when, if there was one mistake I see young coaches make a lot when they first get in the business, is I guess it'd be two points. Is one, they try to solve the world and they try to fix the world. But the thing is, it's not your world. It's your boss's world. You're just living in it. So it's not your world to fix. It's your world to help clean up and whatever he or she thinks needs to be cleaned up or fixed. But it's not yours to change. It's not your world to change. But then on the second piece is young coaches especially, and there's a million different reasons why they would. It's that the comparison is the thief of joy thing. So they always compare, like, I'm working harder than so-and-so, or I had to cover for so-and-so. Yeah, that's part of being on a team.
Guy drives baseline, you rotate over. Yeah, exactly.
Correct. Yeah. And it's a coaching staff, not coaching individuals. We are a team too. So you better get used to that or you're going to struggle. And the minute you start comparing, then next thing you know, you feel isolated and you're isolating others and yourself. And then it becomes a whole thing.
Comparison either in or outside your building.
Bingo.
That's a great point.
It can rob you both ways.
Yeah, that's a great point, because that's the one thing you got to think about is, especially, and I'm just thinking of, you go into a new program, right? Just in general, as an assistant coach, you go into a new program. And it sounds like for you, you went into Sunrise and it was already like a well-oiled machine.
Oh, yeah.
You just had to pop in and it's like you hit the ground running. You morph with your atmosphere. You start working around how everybody else is doing it. And that ultimately where I'm going is that's the culture that is started, and then you just get put into it. You either stand out, or you either stand in and join everybody, or you stand out because it's evident, like, this guy isn't making the cut. He's not doing. And people can, like you said, the players can see it. The coaches can see it. Everybody knows, like, this guy is doing his job or he is not. I remember when I was playing, we had one assistant coach. He was a GA when I was in college. This guy, he didn't do much on the X's and O's, and you never really saw that he was doing much, but all the players talked about it. I remember there was times we go out and we're like, yeah, this guy is busting his tail, and you never really saw it. You didn't. Mm-hmm. It was just like stuff just appeared, the food, the hotel, everything was always organized, but you never really saw it, but we knew this guy's busting his tail over there, and it stands out. It's apparent.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, Yeah. And like you said, Sunrise, at the point when I had gotten there, it was already a well-oiled machine. And they kept calling it this. I had heard about the Sunrise Way, just the culture they had built over there. And so when I got there, it was actually a little bit of a culture shock for me because I was the new guy walking in. But the biggest thing, and you mentioned it, is it's not necessarily don't rock the boat. It's just keep the boat moving in the right direction. And that's probably why you were hired. You were not hired to fix the boat. Your job is to keep rowing and make sure that nothing goes wrong. And that as a young coach, you think a lot of times you're going to go in there and you're going to install this great offense that's going to change the world. And it's probably not the reality of the current situation. That might come down the line, and that's great. You should always prepare for those scenarios. But initially, especially when you enter a new job where there's already a staff that's had some continuity, just fill in and then grow.
So yeah, there was for me personally, there's always one thing that I remind myself every day, and it's really problems, no matter what it is, whether you're in a job, whether you're in coaching, like problems will always come out, right? If you just listen to people, that's the number one thing. When you get new to a program, listen to the coaches or your boss or whatever. People always say, man, why are we so bad at this? Or why aren't we doing this one? It's like the problems will always come out. Then you just got to go find the solutions for them. Now, like they will always present themselves.
That's a great point. Yeah. And it's funny. And a lot of times when you get interviewed, you will, if you listen subtly, a lot of times your boss or the person interviewing you will allude to a lot of those problems. And sometimes they don't even know that they're fixable. But if you just think about it, reflect, maybe look around when you first get there, because that's the beauty of being a new guy on staff, especially at a lot of places that have had continuity, is a lot of times a fresh perspective on things is exactly what they need. And that's probably one of the reasons you're being hired. And you got to accept that and understand that so that maybe you can look at something from a different angle and solve a lot of the things that you're talking about.
Yeah, no doubt. And don't be afraid to interview the interviewers.
Bingo.
Because that's that answers to the test thing, right? They'll tell you what they're looking for while they're just answering your question. But if you have your antennas up, they'll give you some tips on that stuff. But yeah, and being an assistant, that especially for young assistants, don't tell your head coach that it's raining. Go find him an umbrella. You know what
there
I mean?
You go.
It's easy just to say, yeah, man, gosh, this is going on. Yeah, it is. It's cloudy. Yeah, it's sky's wet. Yep. But go be that one that's always in the pursuit of finding an umbrella or something to help to help him cover his head and just be that solution-based mindset.
Yeah, and I guess that was one of the areas that I was a little spoiled with growing up, is seeing my dad as a head coach. All of the stuff that not only goes through a head coach's head during season or practice or games, but then also at home and driving us to school or whatever it may be. There's just so much that goes into being a head coach. And if I've never been a head coach, but I got to see over the years of what his, just all that stuff that goes in there. And as a young assistant, one of the biggest mistakes that someone can make is overloading their head coach with information that's not necessarily vital information. Like you said, talking about if it's raining, just get him an umbrella. Just solve that so he doesn't have to think about the weather. And that could be the difference in whether or not he's too stressed out or overstressed out to where that practice is a little thrown off. And then that can carry over into the game. So just be a problem solver. You don't have to talk about every little thing that's going on in the world. No. It's not that important if you can just go ahead and solve it.
Yeah, no doubt, man. Head coach, the thing head coaches need more than anything, and obviously you learned this through your dad, but, and I just said this to a recent new head coach. He's trying to put a staff together. And I just said, look, protect your mind space. I said, your mind space is your biggest weapon and your biggest currency is your mind space. And when you're cluttered, because there's always going to be something that's going to clutter it. It's like the worst looking attics can look beautiful just because they're attics. Just a lot of stuff is up there, but it can still be organized just because it's an attic. And that mind space is a big deal because there's always going to be something that occupies it. But you want the stuff that needs to occupy it, occupying it. The unnecessary stuff that, you know, as an assistant, can you help empty the attic of your head coach a little bit? And just so the essentials can be in there.
Yeah. And I would probably say it's safe to say that over the past 10 years, there's more information that's flowing towards head coaches than ever before in the history of sports.
Oh, for sure.
And so just the sheer amount of information that they have to sort through on their own is just, it's incredible. And so then as an assistant, if you're adding to that, especially if it's clutter and not useful information, you're not doing your job.
No doubt. And you even mentioned, I know you were saying you haven't had the head coaching experience yet. I know you've had some great assistant experiences, mm-hmm. even being, which I guess I'll say, like the youngest assistant coach in D1 basketball. Was that the 2021 season? Age of 24, one of mm-hmm. the youngest assistants. So that's a cool experience. But you were talking on being a head coach and at least what you have learned so far. If you were, hypothetically, okay, I'm uh-huh. sure you're loving South Alabama, so I don't want to put any words, but I'll say it for you. If you were appointed a head coach tomorrow, what would be some of those things maybe you're like, all right, this is what I would prioritize? And, of course, the program matters, where you're at matters. There's a lot of things that can play into it. But just from your priorities, what were some things that you would want to instill right away?
Great question. I think the first thing reflecting on that question would be like, stealing some stuff that my previous bosses have told me about what they did right or wrong in their first 20, 40 days on the job. So I think the first step would be make sure that, because you're talking about right when you get that head coaching job, make sure your family's on board. If they're not on board, it ain't gonna work. And that's something I've learned from going through my dad and seeing him take different jobs. And he was really good at communicating with us. Hey, there's a job offer in New Orleans. Do you know where New Orleans is? Is that something you guys would want to do? And let's go see it. But then actually involving us in that process really helped, so that when he accepted the job, it felt like we were all accepting the job. And that's really important. And so then you're already supportive of it, because there's obviously going to be a big thing when any family moves, whether it be an assistant job or a head coaching job. Those kids have to say bye to all their friends, and that's not easy. And you better understand that there's going to be some growing pains with that. So if they're not excited about leaving, it's going to be a lot harder. But that's part of it. So I mean, the first one is get the family on board. The second one I would say, and this is something one of my mentors a long time ago has always told me, is whenever you get that first head coaching job, just make sure you hire people smarter than you and just seek them out and bring them in, and don't be afraid to be challenged a little bit. Because especially when it's your first head coaching job, I've been told that you're going to make a lot of mistakes, and that's okay. But if you have people around you that are smarter than you, that also care about you, they're going to be able to help you through some of that stuff and kind of clear that clutter off of that computer, like we were talking about. And then, And then third one, I would say, and this is another one that one of my bosses had always told me, don't be afraid to laugh at yourself. And that's something as a program you have to prioritize, because players in today's era, they have so much feel and they have so much information that if they feel like you're taking yourself too seriously, or if you're trying to be just right out the gate, if you're trying to be a Brad Stevens and you've been a head coach for 24 hours, they're going to feel that. And you can't be Rick Pitino day one. It doesn't work like that. And so you got to be able to laugh at yourself. And if you make mistakes, just enjoy it, because it's probably a really cool process.
Yeah, no, that third one's big, man, because that's the authenticity piece and the sincerity piece. And me and Doug, we laugh about this all the time. Like, just players don't get enough credit for seeing right through stuff like that. They don't get nearly enough credit. These kids aren't 7-year-olds. Like,
no.
Again, the information there, I think their ability to, because of we're in an information age, their brains are trained a lot younger to process things much faster. And maybe not quite as thoroughly, but at least the little chunks, the chicken nuggets that they get mm-hmm. of information, yes. because it's TikTok 15 seconds.
YouTube, yep, six to 15.
Minute and a half. Back. And so
that's a great point.
They're able to process information at a higher rate. And so, but then, like you said, if you are trying to maybe be something you're not, or you want to imitate a coach you saw at a clinic, and you think that's going to, because this is going to be cool and the fellows or the ladies will really get a kick out of this, or they'll really, And so being yourself is such a, again, we talk about weapons that we can have, right? Authenticity is a weapon. The mind space thing is a weapon. Mm-hmm. And just being yourself, I don't know. It's, they know, and you have to understand that you have to know that they know. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably what I'm trying to say as a coach.
Yeah.
Head coach or assistant. You have to know that they know.
Correct. And there's that quote that's always, the truth will set you free. And there's a second side to that, though, too. It's like lying is exhausting. And the more you lie about who you are and your coaching style and so on and so forth, like, eventually the jig will be up. And it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. So if you're just open and honest with the players, like, a lot of those guys do appreciate it and respect it, especially with the transfer portal being the way it is. If they can feel a couple lies, like, they're gone. They're gone. You aren't lost because their attention span 6 to 15 seconds, like you were talking about. So if they can feel you lying, you're not going to have time to build that trust back. Because every 9 months, you've got to basically recommit them to coming back to the program. And that's just how it is. And you talked about the attention span part too. And if you ask, like, another point of what I would want to do in the first couple of days as a head coach or first couple months is a couple things that you really want your program to be defined at, but just don't try to make it too complicated. Just pick 1, 2, 3 things. Hey, we're not going to turn it over. Hey, we're gonna always do this, but it can't be 100 things because these kids just don't process information like that. And it's okay, but you have to be aware of that.
Yeah. Prioritizing like 1 or 2 things, like specifically as you said, I've seen it before as an assistant where there was one stint, this was a couple years ago, there was one stint we were having some struggles, a lot of turnovers here, there, and one thing that we started prioritizing in practice was we started every time a turnover, no matter whether it was a live drill, whether it was a just like you're shooting on your own, right, and you dribble off your foot and the ball goes out of bounds, even just off of a shooting drill, that's a turnover. And we kept track of every single turnover. As soon as 10 got on the scoreboard, we kept track of every one. The whole team had to do some form of punishment, some running or something. That's one thing that my high school coach did too, is every time you hit a certain amount of turnover, because now it makes you, even when you're not doing something detail oriented, just shooting around, like you throw a bad pass to the guy shooting in the corner and you're just shooting, he fumbles it, turnover. And it made you start actually locking in on those little things.
Yeah. And this generation, to your point, you mentioned like a number attached to it. This generation is so analytically and statistically driven that they understand numbers and stats, I would say, more than any previous generation. So they understand 10. Okay, that's a number. If they go above it, they lose. If they stay below, they win. And they understand that stuff because whether it be from video games and leveling up or just seeing all the stats that are thrown around on ESPN, and it's just numbers are like this generation's language. They just understand it. And so if you're trying to convince them to do something, you need to use numbers in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no doubt. My former boss, Thad Mottet, congratulations to him, just retired from Butler. Mm-hmm. But he used to take the ball rack. And when we'd start live stuff at any point in practice, he put 10 balls on the ball rack. And every time there was a turnover, it's like a game show. A manager took a ball off the ball rack. And they look over and there's this visual of, we got 7 left. We got 4 left. All right. It wasn't a fear thing. You're not trying to shake guys out of being too careful. Or actually made them a little bit more aggressive and decisive because they knew what was at stake. But that it was always a pretty cool visual. I remember in our practice, that thing would be sitting over there and a turnover and a manager would run over like Vanna White flipping letters, Wheel of Fortune. Mm-hmm. He'd go grab a ball, take it off, and that countdown would be on. But you're right about that. And I think all we're saying here as we bottle all this is it's on us as coaches to figure out the method, the style, in addition, obviously being yourself, but the language of how to connect with your players. What does that look like? Like you got to, and when kids feel like you're trying to meet them where they are, now you got something, right? If they always feel like you're maybe trying to, every correction is a 4-minute sermon, or you're talking over their heads or using lofty phrases, it's just, again, it gets back to the coach fast, teach slow, right? Yes. Keep practice moving, get in, get out. And then when a guy subs out or a lady subs out, pull them aside. Hey, this is what I was talking about a second ago. Then you can teach slowly. But in the heat of things, and you want to keep practicing, and again, because you're addressing their attention spans as well. Mm-hmm. And that's why when they're getting up and down, it's obviously a little bit easier for them. But if you have these long corrections, that's when, you know, you're getting out of that lane of communicating to them the best way they need it, because it's not about what we say to make us feel better, it's what can they retain.
Yeah, that's a great point. And then you talked about it, like teaching slow, and sometimes like as coaches, I see us a lot with younger coaches, especially when they first get in, is someone will come off of that practice floor and something bad might have happened. They might have turned it over, might have missed a wide open layup, something bad. And they just immediately rush up to them and start coaching them. And there's also, we have to let these players breathe. And you got to let them process what just happened first before they can process what you're coaching them on. And so it's okay to let them go through a little bit of their own emotions, because again, like a lot of them aren't fully matured yet in their emotional aspects. So like they have to learn how to process their emotions and their feelings and all that, and then coach them up. Because if you don't let them breathe, they're not going to be able to retain anything you told them.
Yeah. No, I had a rule and I still live by it. Like when guys would sub out, just give them a minute.
Yep. It's all it takes.
Just give them a minute. Just let them get a drink of water. Let them towel off. Don't rush down there right away and be like, this rotation, you should have. You know, okay.
Yeah.
And sometimes they already know when they see you coming.
They know. Yeah.
Yeah, here we go again.
But now there may be another layer that you have that they didn't know, or the reason why they were late, because they got ball watching on something or whatever the case may be. But like, just give them a minute. That's it's a really good rule of thumb, because again, it's about what can they retain versus what's going to make you feel better.
And there might be some instances where you don't have time to take that full minute. Like for example, like a quick turnover goes to the media or goes to someone calls a 30 second timeout. You don't have a minute, you got 30 seconds and your coach has to immediately give them information. So you might just immediately want to grab them as they're coming off the floor and just be like, hey, just breathe, listen to coach, we'll worry about it later, move on. And that might be all it takes. There also has to be some drill scenarios in there too.
Yeah,
where you just got to learn how to diffuse the situation, give your coach 28 seconds or the maximum he can to coach these guys up, and then get right back to the war.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, and that goes back to what we've talked about. We talked about it another time, was talking in short, quick snippets, right? Like, especially when you're talking to your head coach, especially as an assistant, or if you're talking to a player and you have those 2 seconds that you mentioned left out of the 30 seconds, you got to find a way to get one whole paragraph across to somebody. And you're like, how do I do this? And you got to prioritize the 3 words. Yeah, you literally got to sit there and break down everything you have to say and how to say it. Because if you say it the wrong way, it could be, it's such a psychological game. It really is. I tell you what, it's crazy.
I think the thing that can help is that if your team has a pretty clearly defined terminology and language, that can also help, because now you're coaching a kid through the system, as opposed to something that he or she may have done themselves. So it's not, you should have made this rotation. It's, hey, remember, we want to make sure we pull this way when this happens, or whatever the case, but it's a we thing. Now you're coaching through the system, and especially in practice, you can do that. And that, if kids that are self-conscious that make mistakes, that's a really big one. Because some kids, like when the whole gym's looking at them when they made a mistake, you can tell, like, that's an uneasy feeling. Some kids can stand there and take the heat. Some can't.
Yes.
So the ones that can't, it's not like you're adjusting or being soft coaching-wise. You're still getting your point across. But you're understanding that this person's probably going to struggle. They may shut down if they get put on blast here in front of 30 people in the gym. And blast, not even meaning loud voice, just this, like, them on spotlight on them. So then you say, hey, this mistake, what happened right here, let's all learn from this. We need to do this when this happens.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're taking that pressure off that one person. They don't feel like they got this whole spotlight on them, especially if it's people that kids struggle with that.
And as coaches, we got to work on that too, because there's so many times that I've seen that, like, a head coach might tell you, hey, look, I really need you to work on finishing around the rim off 2 feet with, we'll just use number one on our team. And you spend 3 months working on it with them. And then he goes in there and goes off 1 foot and breaks a layup. And obviously, a lot of times, head coach will be looking at you like this. That first timeout comes up, you can't go to that player and be like, I told you to do this. No. I worked on this with you. You're making me look bad. You're not coaching through the system at that point. You're just letting your emotions out. And that player could go a million different ways, and I would imagine most of them are not going to be good responses. So you got to have a little bit of understanding of that too.
Yeah, no doubt.
So I know there is one thing that me and you talked on a couple days ago, and you mentioned about the recruiting, evaluating recruits, and there's things, like you said, you had some great advice. I wanted to make sure to bring it up before we wrap things up, just because I actually liked how you were mentioning it. You were basically going into how people get thrown, or assistants get thrown into the fire when they have to go recruiting. They start their first assistant position and then the coaches are like, hey, get out there and start recruiting. And you don't necessarily, like, I don't know how to recruit. Maybe sometimes that isn't the case, and people have, hey, coaches have brought you on and been able to teach or show you, but sometimes it is the case where you just get thrown into it. So I know you said you had some great advice, and I wanted to make sure to let you go ahead.
Yeah, and it could be totally wrong. It's just my experiences and with it. And I would say the first point is it has changed even since I've been an assistant coach. I think this is year 8 or 7 or 8 as an assistant coach at the Division I level. It has changed so much over the past 8 years as far as like how you're recruiting, who you're recruiting, what goes into recruiting as far as what these kids want to hear, what they want to talk about. It has changed so much. Even the calendar has changed a ridiculous amount as far as like when you can go out, who you can talk to, when you can have visits. So it's rapidly changing, but I would say it's new for everyone. And that's the first point. And I was a little bit going back to when I was talking about my first job at Sunrise, I was like ignorantly working hard in a good way. And when the transfer portal first opened, I think it was like probably 7 years ago when they first started originally having a portal, I didn't know any better. So I just started doing it alphabetically. And I just was like, I need to finish this thing. So I'm literally just going to eval A through Z. And I didn't know, like, that's not normal, that most people didn't do that. But then what ended up happening, this is what really helped me, was I just kept track of those evals. And it might have been, I might have put this kid's a Division III talent, this kid's a mid-major minus. And then that next year, you just look back and you just track, how many did I get right? And so then your mind starts developing as far as an eye for what you're seeing on film. But you also have a kind of a backlog of going, hey, look, maybe I hit on 62% of those guys last year that I thought were mid-major guys. And so then you start can grow and develop. And then that way, like, okay, the next year, maybe let's try to get a little bit better at it. Just the shooting percentage from three, or just like anything else, you have to work at it and evaluate not only the players, but also how you evaluated them a year later. And I feel like a lot of young coaches, that's something you can do without actually calling a kid ever. You can watch their film online, watch their stuff, put an eval down, and then just 6 months later, check out where they ended up. You know, hey, maybe I think he's an A-10, be a great fit there. Maybe the kid went to the SoCon and you're like, I knew it wasn't the right fit in that league, but you knew that. And that's what you put. Or maybe you had it totally wrong. You said he was A-10 and ended up in the SEC and was first team all league and you were way off. And that's stuff that you can use to grow. But I feel like a lot of people, they just get thrown in and they're like, go sign a player. And it's, you got to know how to evaluate the player first, because signing the player isn't necessarily the problem. It's signing the right player for your level, for your team, for your program. You can convince a lot of different high school kids just come to a program, but is it the right level for them? Is it the right fit? Is it anything correct? But that's where you have to eval. And a lot of it too is video games are also extremely useful now that we are in the rev share era. If I was a high school kid and I knew I wanted to coach, or a college kid, I knew I wanted to coach, I would be playing NBA 2K dynasty mode all the time. Learn how to use a salary cap.
No doubt.
Learn how guys and their contracts and all that work and all that stuff, because that's how all this stuff is moving. And you got to understand that, because if you asked us 10 years ago, how would we be recruiting? It is totally different now, because now there's GMs, now there's roster construction, now there's retention, now there's contracts. It's all new. But if you look across the pond over in Europe, that's how it's been for years over there. And if you look at the NBA, that's how it's been for years. So all of that has like already been going. You can use all of that information that's provided, even on a video game. You can learn stuff. And that's where, like, there's a million different ways to do it for free. Obviously, video game costs a little bit of money, but you don't necessarily have to be out there signing guys to learn how to recruit.
If I had a chance this spring, and I would go just to see if, you know, any NBA buddies would let me in their draft meet, let me in their room just for a couple of days. Just let me come and hang for a couple of days, and just let me understand not just the how you set things up, that's one thing, but just picking up on the thought processes of how important it is. And because you want to talk about a league that picks you apart. Obviously, they only have as many guys to evaluate as we do in college, but talk about they pick you apart. You want to talk about like how you were just saying, level, is this guy so kind? Is this whatever? Like they evaluate down to the socks, man. I mean, it's an unbelievable process. I would love to do that, but I think college level could take a page from the NBA and find whatever NBA resource you have and make that a spring project here, just to go for 2 days or a day and see if they'll just let you. And if they don't let you in the room, then see if you can just go spend time with an assistant GM or Zoom with a guy for 30 minutes on the phone. and pick his brain, right? Because and some of the best teams, of course. There's some teams that aren't doing roster-wise, aren't just because they're in that league doesn't mean they're getting the job done. But try to find a place that's getting the job done, and what does their roster look like, and what's their approach like?
And that NBA deal. I think that would be awesome. It's funny you mentioned the NBA deal. When I was – this is one of those indicator stories. This was a good story. When I was at Tulane, Melvin Frazier was on our team. He ended up going 31st to the Orlando Magic. And obviously Tulane hadn't had a draft pick in a little while. And it was probably about a month before the actual draft took place. And I just started getting all these phone calls. And I'd barely played that entire year. I'd barely played at all. And me and Melvin were teammates. We were relatively close. We weren't hanging out like all that much. And started getting calls. And it would be like Brooklyn Nets. And I'd be like, what in the world? And get on the phone and a different organization and be like, hey, how's his social life? You're like, what? Does he have a girlfriend? How does he treat the managers? And just like all this stuff, I was like, this is incredible. And I had no idea. But that's how you're talking about, that's how in-depth these teams are and these organizations are. And granted, like you said, they're evaluating a lot less numbers and quantities of guys, and they have more time to do it. Obviously, when the transfer portal opens to the time summer starts, you're talking about 5 or 6 weeks. So it's speed dating. But that's where like you have to evaluate fast. And if you trust your evals, like you can make sure those are done faster. Then you can start really diving into the background of these kids faster and figuring out if they treat those managers right, if they have a good social background, all that stuff. So the faster you can do those evals, because you trust your evals and your eyes, because you've been following how good you eval, you can do those faster, and then you can get to the nitty gritty stuff. And that's how you sort through the rubble where everyone else might make a mistake. And then the other point. One, because this is obviously rising coaches, one of the other things that selfishly was really, I think, smart on my end, but it also helped me network incredibly, was I used to, all those kids, for example, when I was at Southeastern Louisiana, you know, I was at a low major, all those kids that I had listed either mid-major, high major, or D2, D3, I would just start sending names to coaches. Hey, coach, just want to introduce myself. These are three names that I found that I think are for your level. And the amount of feedback, some people wouldn't respond, but then other people would be like, yeah, like that's a great call. Do you have any information? Yep, I got his phone number for you. Here's his hometown. Here's his mom's number. Here's his AAU coach. Boom, see ya. And the amount of good feedback that had, and that really just took work. I never talked to the kid, never knew it. It just took work as far as organizing all that together and trusting your eyes. Because if you get one right, then you look really smart.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Yeah. No, and everybody loves to have somebody just fall in their lap too, right? As the coach said,
it's the best.
Yeah. And then they're also going to remember, oh yeah, Riley Conroy, he just sent me X, Y, and Z. He sent me all these guys over the past years, and I landed one of them. The kid ended up being something good.
And it was a kid that probably the reason I was sending it over because it didn't make sense for my level. And so instead of just being like, nothing to use that for, that's still useful information. And it allows you to keep track of all those.
It's networking. You're evaling, you're networking, you're meeting people, you're taking connections. That's some great advice right there to be able to,
Because the amount of people, a lot of people will reach out just throughout the coaching year and just say, hey, I want to introduce myself. Here's about me. And that's great. I appreciate it. But like, it'd be a lot better if you can give me a little value too. And that's where, okay, if I just send three names over that I think after doing research would be great for your program, because it also shows that you've watched our program, you understand our level, you look at and understand the type of players that we're recruiting. And if you do a good job with it, like that says a lot about you as an evaluator and a recruiter.
No doubt. That's a great point. Yeah.
Great. As we wrap it up, that's your resume. Intel question. Great intel question I got from the Memphis Grizzlies about Michael Conley, who is now currently in year 19 of his career. Yeah. So talk about them picking the right guy. But does he go to bed at night, or does he feel like he's missing something if he doesn't go to bed?
That's a great question.
Is he a nighttime? Yeah. Like, what kind of night? Yeah. Is he a nighttime guy? Or like they said, does he feel like he's missing? Because some guys are really like that. If they go, if they're in bed by 11, they're wondering, like, what happened between 11 and 1 that I could have stayed up and gone somewhere and been across town? But that was it was one of their questions out of the hour and a half that I spent on the phone with them.
Yeah.
That was one of the questions that they threw out.
That's a really good question, because it says a lot. But I
think we can be better at that if we get ahead of it, like you said. And a lot of it is knowing what's your head coach, you know, what's he prioritize, you know, who can he coach? These are all filters that help to kind of, you know, shake the sand away from the gold nuggets. But, and it's not about who you like, right? It's not about, hey, I like this guy. It's like, who can my boss coach as well? Mm-hmm. But then getting ahead of it, and then is the talent a fit? Is the other stuff, academics and all that stuff, seem to be a fit? Then let's get to the next level and let's lift the hood and see what's going on. Mm-hmm. But I've never forgotten that question. And that was back in 2007. I thought it was just how thorough they were. It was incredible.
And we said it earlier, it was about how if you listen to what your head coach or other staff members are complaining about, you can often find solutions. So like, talking about who to recruit, listen to your boss. If he's over there after every game going, we just don't have anyone that can break the press. Like, okay, go find someone that can break the press. Yeah, the answer's right there for you. There we go. He's like, man, we just don't have anyone that we can really throw it down low to in one-on-one isolations. Okay, we'll find a big. Go find a big. Just go, like, all the answers are there. You just got to listen.
No doubt. No,
that's great. Well, if anybody didn't take any recruiting advice away, then they definitely haven't been listening to the last.
They fell asleep. Yeah, they fell asleep on this one. This has been solid gold, man. Really good stuff.
Thank you.
Well, again, I know we always say it, but we really do. Taking some time. We appreciate you for hopping on here with us. You, as we said, you shared some great information for not only potential head coaches in the future, assistant coaches, young coaches, recruiting, all across the board. There's some great advice in here. So we really do appreciate you for taking the time, and thank you very much.
Yeah, no, thank you all for having me. I genuinely had a lot of fun doing this. That was awesome.
Yeah, well, please tell your dad hello from Rising Coaches. He's one of the best people in the business, man. He is.
Thank you for saying that.
We want to thank you, but also thank everyone else out there for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. As always, Alan Major and Doug Caputo. You coaches, like we say, keep working and keep rising, coaches.
Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get free shipping on your purchase of a brand new Dr. Dish.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.